Jacqueline Miller and Corliss Derrick from Medical College of Georgia.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to introduce my co-presenter, Corliss Derrick, and to acknowledge our co-author, Dr. Jeanette Andrews, who is at the Medical University of South Carolina. First of all, we have no relationships to disclose. The purpose of this project is a little different from the other two projects you've heard about. We wanted to evaluate the collaboration of undergraduate students, faculty, who also were DMP students at the time, and community members in a community-based participatory research project, and it was designed to reduce risk and improve the overall health of the population. I know that you all know this definition, but this was very important for us to make sure that we kept this as a driver of the whole process. This definition is a compilation from the literature of various authors, that it's based on an equitable, respectful, mutually beneficial partnership between community members and researchers. So that was something that we kept in mind through the whole project.
In 2006, good morning, I'm sorry. In 2006, we were both doctoral students in the MCG DNP program, and we were also teaching full-time to BSN students and clinical nurse leader students. But as part of our doctoral program, we chose to be involved in a community-based participatory research project with a vulnerable at-risk population, the housing community. We had chosen to use the CBPR approach in order to partner with some subsistent fishermen in this at-risk community when we realized that usually when they put meat on the table, it was in form of a local fish that they had caught and sometimes froze and used for several months. We wanted to focus on the reduction of some of the health risk associated with these folks who were catching and eating so much fish as a part of their regular diet, because it was caught in the river and in bodies of water that were close to a Superfund cleanup site. In our experience, the undergraduate students have had little exposure to actual hands-on research opportunities and also little experience in dealing with community partnerships. So in the existing academic environment, we wanted to involve our students with us. And we hope that the benefit to the students would be twofold. For each student would be able to experience the richness of working with a community-based research project in a community that we already had an established relationship. And that also our students would get bitten by the bug of advanced education and that they would want to pursue their next degree when they finish their BSN. So we took advantage of our opportunity in being faculty and also having students on site to enroll them with us in one of their courses as research assistants to help us with our DMP project. We also wanted to teach them how to engage in CBPR in the real world situation. For several years, the School of Nursing at MCG had been working with this community and had the use of an apartment located in the housing project. This existing community advisory board that we used there for several projects also enabled us to work with some trusted members of the community who also trusted us. Oh, I'm still up. Sorry. This pilot research was a descriptive exploratory study of the impact of a community-based participatory research of risk management communication as an intervention for the at-risk population using a one-group convenience sample. The DMP project focused on this housing community that was particularly vulnerable to health risk related to, one, their proximity to the contamination of the Superfund cleanup site, two, the known contamination of the waters in which they fish, primarily from mercury contamination, three, the high proportion of the fish that they consumed in their diets, and 4, the social cultural isolation from information sources. They have no connectivity at all in this housing community to the internet. When we checked at the public health site that this community uses, there was one brochure on safe catching and eating a fish, and we were there to get several brochures to hand out, and they only had one, and they didn't let it go out. So we realized how isolated they were from information. So to address this concern, the researchers initiated a community-based participatory exploratory pilot study to examine the impact of the at-risk community and to deliver a communication intervention for a group of anglers who fish and consume their fish. The objectives of the innovative approach were to develop, implement, and evaluate a socioculturally tailored risk communication program in order to help reduce the risk of the target population and to involve the community stakeholders in all aspects of the process. Here's a picture of the entrance for our subdivision in East Augusta.
The theoretical model that we used was ISIL's Community Connections model that shows the driving force of the community at large and the target audience and stakeholders with the feedback loop through the health services agencies and health program planning committees. While planning for our own DMP project, we are also at the same time planning our community course for our BSN students. This presented us with a unique opportunity to integrate our own DMP education objectives with that of our students, thus exposing them to this pilot project. And as Corliss has already mentioned, we also hope to be able to model the benefits of graduate education by working as a team with our students. The involvement of the faculty / DMP students in this project was most multifaceted. We were principal investigators and DMP students, and we, of course, were also the instructors of the BSN student. I was at the time the community course coordinator, so I made some adaptations to the course to ensure that the objectives matched the project activities. And we also were able to facilitate the involvement of the existing community advisory board, because we had been in this community several years and we'd already had this community advisory board helping us with some other projects. And we applied for and received a small grant from the local chapter, the Beta Omicron chapter of Sigma Theta Tau. And the BSN students' role in the planning of this, there was no coercion. We asked for volunteers for the additional course requirements. They did have to complete the human assurance process in order to be certified as a research assistant, and they also served collaboratively with a team of outreach workers, community outreach workers, and worked with the members of the Community Advisory Board and participated in the weekly planning meetings. And they also helped us with data collection and organized a lunch and the health fair for the community members, and they demonstrated proper method of fish trimming. Okay. I'm sorry, I got a slide ahead there. So they volunteered for the additional course requirement, and we also met with them weekly, actually in the apartment that was in the project, the housing project.
As you might imagine, these students were unaccustomed to going into a housing project of this nature. Sometimes they were unaccustomed to hearing about what went on in these neighborhoods except in the 11 o'clock news, when reports of drive-by shootings or robberies and the such was going on. And so to have our students be exposed to the community in the daytime, when things were calm and the women were home with the children, was a unique opportunity to get them to be less fearful in these neighborhoods and to learn this neighborhood from the perspective of that they were people too. And they learned how to go in and knock on doors, to do door-to-door surveys, to invite them to the intervention, and to learn to communicate with people who are living a quite different life from what most of our students were living. And that in itself was a great experience for our students. The students assisted us in data collection because they were certified to do that by the Human Assurance Committee. And they the faculty obtained all the informed consents. The instrument that we used for data collection was a knowledge and behavioral tool designed for this population of subsistence fishermen. The risk communication program was delivered as designed, and then based on the feedback from the community outreach workers regarding the low literacy of the population, the program was primarily delivered with a PowerPoint image, which was very simple and had verbal reinforcement of the graphic representation. This is a slide of, this is a slide of a community member. You can see the guy with the striped hat. He was the chair of our community advisory board, and he was very essential in communication with our community. And he was always there. He never missed a meeting, and he introduced us to the unelected officials in the community, the opinion makers in the community. And he knew all the stakeholders, and he helped us to establish relationships with them. Let's see. The student standing in front of this group with the red shirt was one of our BSN students, and he is a fisherman himself, a member of the city of Augusta community, not in this neighborhood. But his idea was that in order to make this be more real to the community, that he would stop by and buy some fresh fish the morning of our presentation, and he would demonstrate the actual correct trimming technique, which was very well received by this community, and I think so much better than if we'd had 100 PowerPoint slides to have Stanley standing in front of the room and demonstrating this to them. So you can see that the students got into this presentation. This is another one of our students who was involved in this and volunteered. The students were educated regarding the plans for the summative and process evaluations and to post-testing and final evaluation. This is a photo of our entire School of Nursing research team for this project. Qualitative and process evaluations were used to evaluate the experiences of the students and the faculty as well as the community members. Content analysis was used to analyze the qualitative data addressing feasibility, efficacy, and lessons learned.
So, in terms of evaluating the feasibility of the project, we wanted to look at were the BSN students prepared to undertake their roles as sub-investigators? Were the course objectives met for BSN and DMP students? Was the existence of an established advisory board helpful? And did the researchers have buy-in from the decision makers? So in that area, we made sure that the BSN students were prepared to undertake their roles by actually having them go through the human assurance process and getting feedback from them in terms of their evaluation of the process from their learning experiences. We made sure the course objectives were met for both us and our chair actually was involved with this project on the community advisory board, the chair of our DMP committee. And so she oversaw and made sure that our course objectives were met for our DMP. Just incidentally, we had split up this project. We didn't actually do every... I was involved more in the community-based participatory research part, and Corliss's DMP focused on the risk communication. The existence of the established advisory board was very helpful. I think those of you that work with communities, if you're not known in a community, you just plop in there as researchers, that you really have a hard time doing anything at all. And We were also very fortunate to actually have a physical building there that the community had, was used to us going in there with students and doing research in that environment. So that was extremely helpful and essential. I don't think we could have done it without that existing board. And the buy-in, we had buy-in from our decision makers, our local housing authority and our School of Nursing, who were making decisions about doing this project, was critical and helped us a lot. In terms of the efficacy, we had predominantly very positive responses from our BSN student participants. And I don't, those of you that teach research or are involved in teaching research, a lot of students find research kind of dry when they're undergraduates because they don't really get, we don't have time to give them the hands-on. And these students, although they've already had a regular research course, were just so enthusiastic. And we believe that it changed their minds a little bit about the positive influences of doing research for them personally and educationally. And they also acknowledged the importance of the existing relationship with the community. They got that you can't do anything unless you really, truly partner with a community in order to make a difference in their health. So I'm going to pass over to Corliss now for the last part. I'm sorry about this changeover.
And incidentally, two of the 10 students who were in our group have already enrolled in graduate school. So we feel like that was a positive success from that small group. The BSNs that were involved in the study were not able to complete the entire study because they graduated before we went back for the post-testing data. But they have, many of them have kept up with us in terms of our approach and what we're doing and our continued involvement. But we realized from positive responses within the community and from the students and from our own experience that we need to expand the opportunities to expose more students to this type of research in the future. What our goal at the school is not necessarily that every student will love research, but that everyone will not hate research, and that they will understand how to read it and how to apply it. And we think that we made a small headway with this class in getting to that goal. So in conclusion, we realized that this experience taught us a lot about nursing faculty needing to consider ways to integrate more hands-on and real-world experiences with our students and not hold them at arm's length when we're involved in some rich experiences there. And the students learned the value of establishing those relationships and maintaining long-term relationships within the communities that we seek to serve. These existing relationships can only enhance our capacity to ensure positive health outcomes for the students and for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. We have about 12 minutes for questions, so we can have some good conversations. Any burning questions? Yeah.
My name is David Herbert. I'm a deputy health officer here in Riverside, California. Thank you very much. Very, very excellent presentation. Some of the data that's coming out of Robert Wood Johnson Foundation would indicate that over the next 10 years, the curve looking at the supply or the demand for nurses internationally is at a 45-degree angle, and that the curve looking at the supply of nursing for the next decade is flat at best, so that by 2020 we're going to have perhaps nationally a shortage of 800,000 nurses nationally. Here in California, we believe that in 2020, we're going to have about 54% of the needed nurses, both registered nurses and public health nurses, to fill the jobs that we need to do. I'm very concerned, we're very concerned here about the disconnect between that. And I'm just wondering if we could have any help from you. I think part of the problem, clearly, is there's no good national organization for nursing and public health nursing to track some of the data and trends and take a look at what national priorities should be and come up with solutions. And I'm wondering, perhaps Dean Carey, you could give us some insight as to what those of you who are in power could help us change that for the next decade with our immediate problem, because this cries for a national solution, not just picking it off state by state.
The question had to do is how can we, what ideas do we have for
shooting the gap between the demand for public health nurses and the supply. Was that your question?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So the models that we've been using, you know, I've heard about public health nursing shortage since I became a nurse. So I don't want to tell you how many years that is. He's my new best friend. Thank you. Clearly, the models that we're using for education, you know, where we hold on to our programs, we build excellence in our programs, and we don't share, is not getting the job done. And because we now have the capability of reaching out electronically and other ways for education, we now can think in new models for education. And so I think the problem is we haven't taken the risk. We're still in our silos, in our individual schools, in our states, and we're not reaching across the border to provide the type of education that can really help in this manner. And again, you know, the faculty shortage is huge. And so until we get the faculty shortage squared away, again, using these same principles of collaboration and more like a national model, we're not going to be able to rectify the production issue as well. So what I would say is that we really, really need to stop doing what's not working and to think in new ways. And I know that's pretty painful for many people, but we're not getting the job done with the current models that we're using. And so that is my challenge to all of us, to think about ways in which we can partner, in which we can bring in more faculty so that we can produce more students. And, you know, we were talking about the RN to BSN programs, and maybe we need to stop talking about RN to BSN and start talking about RN to master's right off the bat. But that's a whole nother issue. Okay, so anybody else? Pam, do you have any other?
Thank you so much for sharing that strategy. I think there are a number of places around the country that are partnering with public health nurses, and I see you want to talk about that, Dr. Zoner. So.
Oh, I just wanted to mention one other model, not specific to public health nursing, but one of the things that we've done in Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin-Madison now has a partnership program with Gunderson Lutheran Medical Foundation, which is in La Crosse. And so the one way that we've been able to expand our enrollment was through this public-private partnership with them, where we now have 48 students who get their UW-Madison degrees, never having set foot in Madison, but spending it in La Crosse. And the instructors in the program are advanced practice nurses who work for Gundersen Lutheran Medical Foundation for that hospital. And so they're paid by the hospital. And then we do hire some clinical instructors. But again, that the funding is actually coming from the medical foundation there. So it's almost like updating the old diploma school route, only connecting it to an academic program. And the, you know, very skilled practice people who the rest of their time they're working, you know, in practice settings are then teaching the students. And certainly the hospital, the medical foundation is interested in the model because they want to hire those graduates, right? And that's why they're in it, because they're trying to fill their ranks. And it's not actually quite as successful in doing that just yet, because students like to go off and do other things. But now they're coming back to work there, so that's another model.
I thought you were going to mention the online training you had for your preceptors that might be useful for partners in the community, preceptors, public health nursing preceptors. And at University of Texas at Austin, we have a grant from our Board of Higher Education to partner with hospital nurses to have them take our online nursing education courses. But I would like to see that model expanded to our public health nurses. Yes.
Hi, I'm Rebecca, and I work at Hope Hospital in Newport Beach. And our hospital does happen to partner with a variety of different local universities, Long Beach and now Vanguard University, to provide the RN to BSN, MSN, and to have the MSN program. But what is unique about our community is that because we are a not-for-profit institution, we have a community benefits program where we have to demonstrate to the state how we return our not-for-profit dollars back to the community. And what we have done in our program is, I'm a previous public health nurse from Orange County, and I work in that department, and our goal is to partner with community-based organizations and with a particular private clinic in which we provide access to our facility for those underserved and underrepresented populations. But we take those students, the BSN students, both within my department in community health and with our parish nurse partner, and we get them out into the community that way, exposing them to the different aspects of PHN nursing, but with an acute care setting background.
Interesting strategies. Any more questions or comments? Do you have questions?
Well, we're talking about educational entry, but I think our shortage is going to remain a problem in part due to the salary differential between hospital and public health nursing, at least in some states. That's true with expenses.
And as the supply and demand curves go apart, that the hospitals are going to be forced to raise salaries, and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And the real bottleneck occurs when there's not enough faculty to take the increased numbers of applicants to turn them into graduate nurses. So there's a salary issue there as well.
Complex issues. Any other questions or comments, or any one of our speakers think of something they wish they had said? Will you come up here to answer it, Dr. Derrick, so we are recorded for posterity? There's a question about tools for growing cultural awareness and cultural competence.
We have another faculty member who's just come in here who was the director of the undergraduate program at the time, and we think that the cultural awareness tools and the that was a thread throughout our program. So I don't think that we can point to any one course that had specific tools, but that it is cultural competency that is a thread since their beginning summer. Is that right, Gail? This is Dr. Gail Bentley. She was our undergraduate program director at the time at MCG. So specifically, I couldn't tell you that, but the immersion was the best thing that could ever happen to them, worth more than 1,000 lectures or any online presentation they could have viewed. I think that, you know, I saw the timidity and the downright fear in some of them as they embarked on their first door-to-door visit.
And fear for the students, the fear for the residents, the things that's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it had a great outcome. We were so happy. Thank you.
Thank you all for attending this morning, and I'd like to give another round of applause to all of our presenters. Thank you so much, and they might be here for a minute if you want to talk with them afterwards. Thanks again.
Phone, did she tell you?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that worked. Okay, take one with her by herself.
Why?
She might want to have some separate publicity.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm all about publicity.
You can see that in the background, right?
Yeah, I tried that once too.
Oh.
thought there was a switch, but that says light. Yeah, that's the light. Okay, well,
thank you, Al.
Thanks, me too. Davis is up north, but yeah, he's the Davis, and they're not the PMC.